It's time for What's Up with Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Shane Reti.
Morena, Dr. Reti, how are you this morning?
Morena, Rachel. Pai anna, pihi anna hoki.
A bit tired today, but also getting there. It's a long lockdown here in Tāmaki Makaurau, and we are going to chat a little bit about COVID, but I do want to start with talking about COP26, because this is another huge thing happening in the world that, is going on despite all of the pandemic happening at the same time. Now, we've seen the outcomes from this on the weekend, generally agreed by experts to be some small steps forward, but there have been some perhaps frustrations around coal, particularly. There was a last-minute change to the wording around phasing down, not phasing out of coal. Now, what's the National Party's position on the role of coal in Aotearoa's future?
So if I look back at the Glasgow Climate Pact, a number of things, first of all. Three key things stick out. The ambition to reduce emissions, and of course that's important. We were enthusiastic for a split gas contribution to the national determined contribution, that is split methane out from the other gases, because we think to leave them all as one is going to be a real challenge for our agricultural sector. And the 6% target, just to put that in context, the global reduction in emissions during lockdown 2020 was about 6%. So we'd need to do that next year and then double it again the year after. That's all going to be hard. Doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. The second thing that came out of the Glasgow Climate Pact, and I'll come to coal as the third, but the second was increasing climate finance. That's a good idea. Very supportive of technologies, continuing to invest in technologies that reduce our carbon footprint. And to come to your initial question then, the phase down, not the phase out of coal. We're very supportive of a phase out, and it sort of serves as a paradox why, and I believe New Zealanders are, and indeed the current government, but how can we say that with one hand and be burning Indonesian coal in Huntly at the other and actually increasing our coal emission?
So what would the National Party like to see change in the immediate and the short term, but also in the long term?
Oh, better energy and gas distribution, planning, more use of natural gas, less use of coal. The government needs to rethink its oil and gas policy about stopping offshore exploration of oil and gas. That whole energy creation, exploration and distribution pathway needs to be changed so that we've got an alternative to coal.
And how are we going to manage that? Because it is a big shift, as you say, a necessary shift as well, but it's going to be quite disruptive in the meantime. What are some of the ways in which you'd like to see that transition happen?
So improve hydro generation. We already have the biggest contribution to our electricity network is with hydro generation. We need to continue to do that, look at building new infrastructure around that. We do need to consider opening the offshore oil and gas exploration fields, and we need to have a distribution network that can distribute natural gas particularly, so that we don't have to rely on burning coal at Huntly.
Now, the other topic I do want to come back to is this concept of methane, because that was actually almost a surprise announcement from the COP agreement this year to cut total methane emissions by 30% by 2030, that's around the world. Now, this has been a conversation that's been very difficult to even have in Aotearoa for the last 30 years, particularly because of the importance of the agriculture sector on the economy here in Aotearoa. How would the National Party propose we move forward with dealing with agriculture emissions in New Zealand?
Several things. First of all, we need to have a target that's realistic. So it's fine for other countries who aren't as dependent as we are on our agricultural sector to set these ambitious targets. We're the ones who need to implement it. And remember, our contribution to overall emissions is 0.17%. So we're very small. We're still green efficient. We can always do better. But if we don't, then other dirtier farming practices in other countries will actually emit an awful lot more. So we're very supportive, as I mentioned, of improving technology and the opportunities that offers to the agricultural sector, which has been a work in progress. This is nothing new, a work in progress over many years, and we need to continue to push hard with that. And this is going to be really hard for our agricultural sector. And again, don't forget, we have a different profile to other countries. We will bear a heavier burden for a smaller contribution to overall global warming.
Now, there has been discussions for a long time in Aotearoa that our sort of reliance on dairy, particularly in the farming sector, is not sustainable in the future. Is there a need right now to be having discussions in the agriculture sector about phasing away from that? And is that something the National Party would support, supporting that community into transitioning potentially away from dairy?
I think the overall ambition has been on the table for a decade or more. Let's remember, we're only surviving here now during the current COVID crisis because of dairy. So let's not kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. But the overall principle of diversification is absolutely correct. And what I'd put to you is that's not reducing dairy, that's building up other industries. We can have it both. We need to be diversifying.
Can we have it both, though, when we need to be reaching these methane reduction targets?
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely we can. We can have that by improving technology, by improving carbon sequestration and a range of other mechanisms, but I would be reluctant to reduce our long and historical and very important waiting on dairy, build up other industries to diversify rather than just reduce dairy. All that reduces is our biggest contribution to GDP export and our competitive advantage in the world. Build up other industries.
All right, well, let's talk about COVID now, the other big topic of the times. We've heard from the government that there's going to be potentially an early shift into the traffic light framework. Now, this has been advised by public health officials that it will afford more protection for regions outside of Tāmaki once we are starting to see these cases pop up outside of the Auckland border. Now, what's the National Party's view on this potential move before we do hit that initial target that was set of 90% for each DHB?
Well, two propositions here. First of all, we wouldn't have even had the traffic light system. We'd have done like Michael Baker and a number of other epidemiologists suggested and maintained the initial alert levels. We wouldn't have gone to these complex and crazy steps and then segueing into a traffic light system. It just seems to change by the day. Auckland may move before others. South Island may be privileged as well. Now it may be actually regional. It's all very complex. So if we propose, first of all, we wouldn't have even had a traffic light system. That's one argument. The second argument then is if the government is going to push into a traffic light system, what is the timing? What is the schedule? Well, you know, they've got the data and the modelling to make decisions on that. It's just there's no obvious plan. It just seems to change by the week. Initially it was going to Auckland, and now we heard earlier this week that it may be nuanced down to a regional level. It's really hard to see a plan that changes by the day. I'd be surprised. Health advice is generally risk-averse. I'd be surprised if health advice was supportive of this.
It does seem to be the case, though, that the public health officials have said that this is going to afford more protection for those regions that are not currently in a stricter alert level system. I do want to go back to this idea that you would not have brought in the traffic light system if National is in this position at the moment. What alternatives would you have offered?
Oh, as the epidemiologist said, we'd have stayed with alert levels 1, 2, 3 and 4.
But we've seen that has not necessarily been as effective this time round with Delta. How would you have shifted nuanced those alert level systems?
How effective has this been? How effective has cases gone up, going to the steps under levels, or gone down? They've gone up. So how effective has the steps been? And then a proposition that another third structure might come in. This is all just confusing to New Zealanders.
But this is potentially a big shift in our mentality as well. From an elimination strategy into a suppression strategy, this was always going to be a very difficult transition time. What would you like to see from the government to perhaps make it easier for people to understand if that's something that you're concerned about at the moment?
So that shift from elimination to suppression was inevitable, and the government hung out on this vanity project that we're the only country in the world that can eliminate. And I'm sure there'll be some review, and then we've called for an inquiry into all of this as to whether we hung too long on that fanciful dream and whether there were any consequences to that. It was very clear to everyone that it was going to be...
When you say consequences, what do you mean?
Oh, okay, so did we sort of change alert levels for reasons that weren't science-based, and was that an impact on our current coronavirus case levels? Has that been a consequence of being adamant around elimination so that we were not prepared for suppression. So suppression talks about things like, for example, the vaccine certificates, which actually just comes back to the traffic light system, by the way, if they are bedded to it. It's a vaccination-based system, totally predicated on having a vaccine passport. And what we know, disappointingly, is it was only October that order was placed, so it's hard to know if the traffic light system is going to deploy without one of the key documents. That's a different discussion. But if suppression had been entertained and prepared for, then we could have been preparing things like, first of all, boosters, like the vaccine passport. We may have had different timing, different schedule, if we'd have accepted a suppression proposition earlier than we have. That's the sort of things the Royal Commission of Inquiry would look into.
Now, we are going to hear an announcement later today from the Prime Minister on the date that Aucklanders will be able to leave the city. What are you hoping to hear from this announcement?
I think everyone was hoping to hear it on Monday, actually. Sort of an announcement for an announcement. We're done with that. I think New Zealanders are done with it too. What's different from Monday to now? This is what Aucklanders are telling us. What's different from Monday to now? What do they know that they didn't know Monday that would have changed anything? There are businesses dying.
Well, perhaps it's the rollout of the vaccination passport this morning. Perhaps that's what they've been waiting for. Do you think that was a necessary thing to wait for?
I think it was something that should have been organised 6-8 months ago. In fact, almost the time we organised the vaccines, we should have been thinking there's going to be some time when we're going to need to authenticate that people have had a vaccine or not. That's called a vaccine passport. So having it delayed this far and potentially holding Auckland this far, and the whole traffic light system for something that really should have been done a long time ago is not good management.
Now, the last thing I did want to touch on this morning is the National Party has been very critical of the MIQ system at the moment, particularly arguing that we should not be holding those spaces for travellers coming back from overseas who potentially have COVID when we have got people in the community in Auckland who have got COVID and unable to use those spaces. What would you like to see change right now?
Sure. So the proposition is a little different. What it is that we have people isolating at home with known positive coronavirus, thousands of them. We have New Zealanders wanting to come home who are negative, who will test negative, and yet they go into MIQ. That's what's hard to explain. There's no science to that. It's just not possible. Why are thousands of New Zealanders offshore unable to come home when they don't have coronavirus, demonstrably don't have coronavirus, and yet we have New Zealanders with coronavirus who are able to self-isolate? Why can those offshore people not self-isolate? It's a really simple question. Hard to find any answer that makes any sense whatsoever.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Dr. Shane Areti, Deputy Leader of the National Party. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks. Take care until then.
Good to speak with you. Kia pai tō haerenga.
Kia pai tō rā. Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Shane Areti.